From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of March 2022, the first full day of spring. Actually, the second day of spring. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll hear how spring began yesterday and not today. That with Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics in Chicago, Illinois. And Ben Brown will be here from University of Missouri Extension to discuss the agricultural export picture and how he sees the acreage battle taking place across the Midwest. Oh, and we'll start our discussion today, as we usually do, with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled at $7.56 and a quarter. It was 14 and a half cents higher at the end of the day. July at $7.28 and a quarter, up 15 and three quarters. And December futures at $6.64, 18 and a half higher. The May soybeans up 23 at $16.91. July $16.72 and a quarter, 26 and a half higher. And November beans up 23 and a quarter at $14.90. The bean meal $4.30 higher at $481.30. And the bean oil at $73.71, up $1.42. Wheat futures soft red, 55 and a half higher for the May. That's at $11.19 and a quarter. July, the harvest month, up 48 and a quarter at $10.93. And the hard red July finished at $11.03 and a quarter, up 41 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures at $136.35, down 72 and a half. The May feeders down $1.70. $165.75 the final trade there, and lean hogs at $119.82.5 per 100 pounds, $3.75 higher. Crude oil at $109.21 a barrel, up $6.12. Diesel fuel or heating oil about 14 and a tenth of a cent higher per gallon at $3.52.5, and gasoline on the RBOB at $3.32, 11 and 4 tenths of a cent higher. That's the wholesale price of gasoline. The Dow Jones Industrial Average around 261 points lower, 34,372, and the S&P 500 down 13.25 points at 44.39 or thereabouts. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace for the day. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, you're welcome, Todd. It was an interesting weekend. I don't know about anybody else, but I was a little heavy on the Big Ten teams, and that kind of blew up on me. The good news, I'm still number one in my pool, but my wife pointed out I'm the only one in my pool. So,
well, it would be best if you actually had a pool to be in.
Me, myself, and I.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was a beautiful weekend, though it was kind of ugly for the Big Ten, and it was too bad for the Illini yesterday, too. I did my taxes and watched the Illini both. Neither winch all went all that well for me. So that's the way things happen sometimes. Yeah. I do want to talk about the marketplace. I thought by the end of last week that the volatility was subsiding some, but apparently that's not going to be the case. Can you tell me about overnight trade and day trade for this Monday?
Yeah, volatility is not going to go away. It's going to remain rampant. There's just a lot of moving parts in the world. Thank goodness for the good weekend weather and the tournament to help take the edge off or give everybody a little bit of relief on this Ukrainian situation. It just totally continues to be devastating. Yeah, Matt Bennett's group, agmarket.net, they put out an email this morning here just giving a little bit more insight on what some of the comments were from the larger farmer and ag supply company managers in that region. And so the more feedback we get, the trade gets a little bit more information to go off of. But in that email, it pointed out that the wheat's in, had most of the fertilizer on, I believe, and we could probably see a 15% reduction in yield due to the fact of fungicide and so forth. On the corn side, they did indicate that the producer has the seed, but the big thing is the fuel and the rest of the products to come. They only got 20% booked or on farm, is the way I understood it. So fuel is going to be a major issue. there. But the bottom line, just total devastation. You know, the infrastructure, just everything's kind of tore up. And so the market was quick to put some premium back into the wheat market. And wheat ran back up to those highs we made last week. We're still in a sideways congestion pattern. Also, we saw a little bit more buying from the fact that the wet forecast for the wheat belt fizzed out. A lot of the readings were in that quarter to half inch area with 60% coverage. So that added the urgency to put some long positions back on the books here. Volume was fair, but not overwhelming. Going into midday there, most of the funds were buyers of 10 to 15,000 contracts. And when we finished here at the end of the day, the new crop corn was able to move into new contract highs.
What are the fundamentals beyond the Ukraine war that have been holding up this marketplace? So if that were to be taken out, what's left? I mean, and we've talked about them in the past, but just as a reminder, for instance, inflation and a few other things.
Yeah, inflation and several things here. I think the ag community needs to step up here and take front and center ethanol guys and everybody to educate the public on how much the farmer receives or where the farmers at on this, because this food to fuel is starting to heat up in through here, and that can be a concern. The biggest black swan event is probably China. They're kind of in the middle here. This the comments coming out. It sounds like they're not going to tell Putin to back off right at the moment. But when you go back a little ways, I've got more emails than Hillary does. I went back in December here and saw that China was buying anywhere from 8 to 10 million metric tons of Ukrainian corn. So did they have prior knowledge of this? But 8 to 10 million metric tons of corn is a huge amount. But the problem they're in is they did not get that shipped out. There's still a lot of corn stuck there. So China has come to the world market here, and we've not seen any big daily sales announced. But there's ideas that as strong as this golf bid is, that they're buying some U.S. corn to help give the market a little oomph underneath it here. The other thing is I didn't have a chance to really follow up on it. Maybe you've seen it, Todd, is we're having problems with the railways up in the northern regions here, the Pacific Northwest, and they happen to have a complete shutdown or a lockout there that could slow down transportation. And that's the last thing we need to do with the big demand base we've got going here.
And that, of course, with the labor dispute in the Canadian Pacific or the CP, and I have not actually looked at that yet today, too. But today was a deadline day for them, so that could be playing into the marketplace. What do we know about the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil at this time?
Well, that's a good question. That's gone to the back burner for the most part here, and that's yet to be determined here. We're in a situation here where Brazil's going to be wrapping up with their soybean harvest fairly quickly, and the key is, you know, how fast that is moved in here. The problem with the corn out of the southern hemisphere is it's been delayed, and there's ideas that you won't probably see a whole lot of corn come out until we get more in July. So that keeps the U.S. corn market fairly active here until we get a handle on how large, how small that crop is, and how soon that could come out. If Argentina's short with some funds, each one of these countries are evaluating their own situation. And hopefully each country won't decide they need to have food security and up the export tax or just ban exports, period.
A week from this coming Thursday, USDA will release the prospective plantings and the grain stocks figures. I'm wondering if you have thought on one or both of those reports.
Well, the trade's gearing towards an extra million bean acres. The corn number could be 1 to 1.5 million acres less. I'm more in the ballpark of higher both sides. If you go back in history, it seems like these high prices bring out an extra magical 4 to 5 million acres. And so I would think corn acres unchanged, maybe slightly higher, a few more bean acres around. Just the opposite, when we got low prices, that 4 to 5 million acres kind of magically disappears. But also, too, the other part of the equation will be the grain stocks number. That'll measure the usage that took place here this winter, and that'll give the trade an idea how many bushels we have to work with between now and September 1.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Oh, it's just a dynamic market. I think the number one thing a producer can do in through here is put a price floor underneath them. That way, if a black swan event would occur, that you've got some additional downside protection, and then use some management skills here to kind of scale into the upside here, because yes, we can go sharply higher, but the volatility is going to remain sharply higher too.
Hey, one final thing, and I don't know if you saw this or not, and I'm not sure what Swicker's answer really meant to me, but in the soybeans, there's a bear flag on the weekly side from that February outside down day in November. And all he told me was giddy up. I thought it looked bearish to me. But maybe he was just kidding me. I don't know.
we had a pennant going. You can kind of draw a flag there. Today we did move briefly above $17 in the May contract here. So if this bean market wants to giddy up and go, we need to move above $17 here and turn on the afterburners.
Hey, thanks much. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. On this Monday, let's check in with Ben Brown at Missouri University Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Ben, thanks for being with us. I'd like you to pick your favorite topic here of four, potentially. Inflation, the war in Ukraine, the South American crops, and or the acreage battle that's coming up. Which is it you want to talk about today?
you certainly hit the gamut there, if you will. But it's crazy. And you mentioned corn and soybeans. You know, I'd throw in wheat. Wheat's been the other crop, just trying to get a grasp on, you know, how this impacts both globally and certainly we've had a very rapid shift in the picture for corn and soybean producers here in the United States. Just 2 years ago, we were trying to figure out what to do with all this extra grain and soybeans. And within, you know, a very quick period of time, we've kind of erased all that and now starting to have questions about how do we prevent prices to go, you know, from going higher to prevent food inflation. Right. And so we've had calls across the board in a very, very quick period of time. A couple of things, I guess, out of the Black Sea region. Everybody's still trying to get a grasp on it. There's a lot of people that talk and provide insights, and you kind of got to wade through the noise and figure out, okay, what's actually a useful tidbit of information to have. I think some of the early fears that there would be no trade out of the region have been alleviated some by the fact that we are seeing some shipments out of both Ukraine and Russia for old crop supplies. But then also there's other places in the world like India and Australia that have, you know, helped meet or pick up some of the extra demand that's out there. So on the wheat side, I think a lot of that's being shaken out to some extent. On corn, I think we're still seeing some of that impact here in the United States. We had a very strong two-week period of corn export sales the last 2 weeks. A record 2 weeks ago for this marketing year, and then following that up with a very strong week of export sales. That hasn't necessarily transitioned yet into export inspections, so product actually getting on the boat and leaving the United States. We had 58 million bushels roughly last week, which is basically right in line with a four-week rolling average, but still leaves us short of the deficit to hit USDA's current target. So while we've seen strong sales, and it does take a while for logistics to all work out and get on the boat, physical exports so far have been slow, but starting to see that export sales market really pick up. And I think corn's the story, or I think corn's the crop. You asked me which story I wanted to tackle. I think corn is the product or the crop that here in the United States really has the opportunity to pick up some of that world demand. Everybody's trying to figure out how much corn Ukraine's going to be able to plant this year. And I'll just fully say, I have no idea. I'm not even prepared to make a guess of how much, or I'm not even qualified to make a guess in terms of how much corn Ukraine might plant. What I am able to do is say, okay, let's just sit here and say, what if the United States picks up 300 million extra bushels of demand, or 250 million bushels of extra demand from somewhere in the world that would rely on China? What does that do? And certainly, I'm not saying we are going to pick up that much demand. Brazil's still got a crop that'll come to market during this time frame as well, and we're yet to see how many acres we plant here in the United States. Although we're going to get USDA's first iteration of the acreage war. I always call it and refer to it kind of like a bid-ask spread. Producers are putting out their bid of how many acres they think they're gonna plant, and then the market will react to that and say, no, we actually need more acres, or we need less acres, right? The market will react. But here at the end of the month, we'll get the prospective planting report. And I think corn's the story, both globally, given the geopolitical tensions in the Black Sea region, and how many acres we plant here in the United States that producers need to watch over the next couple weeks.
I know you've been out. What have you been hearing from producers about their prospective planting intentions?
I certainly have my list of questions. I love my extension appointment for a range of reasons. Probably the thing I love most about it is it's an opportunity for me to find out what's actually on people's minds and kind of answer some of the questions that are on my mind. And certainly one of those is how much is higher fertilizer prices impacting planting decisions, given where corn prices are today? That's, I think, everybody's question. That's certainly my question. And I think we are seeing some of that, especially in areas, and Missouri is a prime candidate where I sit, for parts of the country where we've got pretty volatile corn yields that come along with some pretty stable soybean yields. And so when input costs across the board, just for an operating, putting in an acre of corn, get as high as what they are, people are willing to take the risk on the soybean crop just because it has the history of being the more stable crop. So I do think we'll see some acreage shifts here in Missouri from corn to soybean. Now, does that mean that places like Illinois, Indiana, Iowa see shifts in acreage from corn to soybeans? That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying here in some of the more marginal areas or fringe areas of the Corn Belt, where corn is more volatile, I do think we're seeing some of those shifts from corn to soybeans.
Do you have a list of things producers should consider at this point?
What should they consider? Well, we're a week past the crop insurance deadline. I would have told them to to really, really look at those higher level coverage options, especially at these prices, these projected prices that we've seen. And that's going to dictate, I think, a lot of the risk appetite producers are going to take on. Certainly, corn is competitive. I'm not going to sit here and say that corn has priced itself out of the market and that soybeans are just running away with the acreage battle. That's not what we're seeing. It's how much risk appetite you have. There's money to be made in both crops right now, corn and soybeans. And producers love to plant corn. It's one of those crops that's fun to plant, fun to harvest. Not saying soybeans isn't, but we could see, with good weather, we could see a lot of corn acres here in the United States.
When you're talking about the risk producers are taking on, do you mean by making forward sales?
No, actually, that's not what I was talking about from that standpoint. Just with the higher operating costs that it takes to put in an acre of corn, some of that risk, that downside risk, was being covered by crop insurance prices that we saw in the last, and over the month of February, the run up in prices that certainly led us to some of our highest highest corn projected price we've ever had. Is certainly going to make crop insurance premiums, or did make crop insurance premiums high this year, but certainly helped alleviate some of the downside risk and will provide some operating coverage. And so I guess that's what I mean by risk, is when you're sitting there and it's costing you $1,100 to put an acre of corn, or $800 to $1,100 an acre to put in an acre of corn, that's a lot of risk that you got to think about there and protect.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Ben.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Brown is an agricultural economist at Missouri University Extension and with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hey, thanks, Mark, for being with us today, and happy spring.
Hi, Todd. Happy spring to you as well. Thank you.
Hey, when did spring begin?
It began yesterday on Sunday, March the 20th. I believe around 10:30 a.m. was the technical time it switched.
That's too funny, and thank you. So it switched yesterday, not today, but it varies from year to year, from the 20th, as you said, to the 22nd, but usually lands on the 21st. Now, let's talk a little bit about spring planting. Where shall we start in the United States?
Well, the most important area right now, at least for the latter portion of March, is down across the southern U.S., and it's going to be a slow week for planting down there due to actually quite a stormy week here, especially the next few days. Major severe weather outbreak is expected from Texas on through the Delta and onto the southeast for between now and Wednesday, and then also comes the risk of heavier rains as well. So, you know, that is going to result in some moderate to heavy rainfall and keep things on the slow side for this week.
Any indications for next week?
Well, for next week, it does look like there'll be some additional rains across the region, as well as up north in the areas of the Midwest as well. Preliminary outlook does not appear to be as wet as this week, but again, we'll have to watch how things evolve as we look out into next week.
Do you have longer-term projections?
Yeah, right now we're not seeing any kind of red flags here of an exceptionally wet spring, which is really the most important item here at this stage of the season. Still got to monitor temperatures, a lot of variability coming up, but all in all, in some areas actually with some of the increase in rain that's actually needed to help it improve topsoil moistures after some drier conditions over the winter.
I think those might be out west. Speaking of which, do you have concerns over the hard red winter wheat crop at the moment?
Yeah, obviously the long-term dryness in the plains hard red winter wheat belt remains an item of concern. They are getting some relief here this week. In fact, the storm systems tracking across the southern U.S. is going to bring more widespread rains to portions of the hard red belt, especially in areas of like central eastern Kansas, some parts of western Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle. Especially with the system here these next couple of days.
Finally, if you could turn your attention to South America and tell me a little bit about the weather and the forecast for the second crop or safrinha corn.
It's faring quite well at this time. Across the northern belt of the largest safrinha corn areas, they've been getting good rains. More rain is on the way. That will keep them in good shape. Across the southern belt, though, they've been under the long-term drought conditions there, and obviously rain is needed. And the pattern has turned active in the past week and looks to stay that way over the next couple of weeks. So that is helping them at this early stage of the season there.
Thanks much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics, joined us here on the Closing Market Report and helped us wrap up this edition of our program. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.